Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My name is Alexis Okewo, and I'm a freelance writer. I publish often in The New Yorker, and I'm the author of A Moonless, Starless Sky, Ordinary Women and Men Fighting Extremism in Africa.
These days, Alexis is a celebrated writer. She's just published her first book and has a coveted role as a staff writer for The New Yorker. But it hasn't always been this way. When Alexis graduated Princeton University in 2006, she was a little lost.
My senior year of college, I knew I wanted to get a job in journalism, but it was proving pretty difficult to find a job in New York. So there was this program at my alma mater that placed recent graduates in internships across the continent of Africa. And one of them was at a state-run newspaper in Uganda. So I kind of applied for it blindly. I'd never been to Uganda, but I thought it sounded interesting, and I ended up getting it.
So a young 20-something, Alexis was there in Kampala. She was given the role of junior reporter and told to go and find stories.
I had a lot of freedom to pursue all types of stories, and they let me travel around the country. It was just a really nice way to kind of learn how to be abroad, how to work abroad, and also how to learn the grind of being on a daily newspaper, but in a completely unexpected setting.
Once the internship had finished, Alexis stayed on, working in the country until months later she headed back to the US. But she'd fallen in love with East Africa. Her parents were from the west of the continent, Nigeria, and she had grown up in Alabama in the US, but she'd always felt an instinctive curiosity to learn more about the continent of her ancestors. She writes, "Feeling neither wholly American nor African, I came to see myself as an outsider in both places, an observer at the fringes. It was a perspective that helped me learn to report with clarity." Alexis relished the idea of telling stories from across the African continent, beyond the sensationalized and frequently patronizing foreign reporting she'd read. So in 2012, a few years later, she found herself getting back on a plane. She was heading back to Uganda. This time Alexis was working as a freelance journalist. She was in the country to research a story about gay rights, and the research was going well. But the outside world seemed to care about just one thing.
The wanted man is Joseph Kony, charged with abducting huge numbers of children, forcing them to kill and mutilate innocent victims.
For decades, a vicious rebel group, the Lord's Resistance Army, or LRA, had terrorized swathes of Uganda. They decimated villages, attacked refugee camps, and abducted tens of thousands of children, forcing them to fight or serve the troops. The country was locked in a long and bloody cat and mouse chase as government troops desperately tried to put down the insurgency. But for many in the West, the first time the news of the conflict really hit home was 2012.
Our goal is to change the conversation of our culture and get people to ask, who is Joseph Kony? We have printed hundreds of thousands of posters, stickers, yard signs, and flyers that are right now, today, being put up in major cities all
until this week. Few Americans had heard of Joseph Kony or the atrocities he is said to have committed in Central Africa. But watch what happened when a charity posted a video on the internet to raise awareness about Kony and his alleged crimes.
Back in 2012, Invisible Children, a video about the LRA and its leader Joseph Kony went viral. To date, it's had more than 102 million hits on YouTube.
Yeah, that's what made Joseph Kony famous, as they said. But yeah, again, it was painted as like, you know, rescue the poor Ugandan people. And it's like, you know, they rescued a lot of people who got caught up in that rebel group, rescued themselves. They escaped by themselves, you know, through not much help from the Ugandan government or, you know, any NGO that was supposed to come in and save them. And now they're trying to, you know, live in the aftermath of that. And the best way anyone outside of that can help is not by trying to go in and rescue them, but to see and recognize what they're doing and to appreciate that.
Rather than perpetuate the old worn-out narrative of white people needing to save poor Africans, Alexis, herself a mixture of African heritage and American birth, wanted to tell these stories a different way.
I think that if we are going to tell these stories of war and societies upended by terrorism, let's tell them in a different way. Let's talk about the people who are living at the center of them, so that people far away can feel empathy, so that when people hear about a terrorist attack in Somalia that killed 500 people, they can begin to think about it in a way that resembles the way they think about a terrorist attack in Paris or in Las Vegas. There's this incredible, you know, saddening distance that people feel towards tragic situations in Africa. They can't imagine, you know, the mothers, the students, the people just trying to get on with the business of living, like going to work and going to school and having love and worries in their lives. And I think that's really the fault of the media, of the people who are telling the stories about what's going on in these places.
So Alexis was, of course, aware of the LRA, but she was certain she didn't want to add to the already two-dimensional Western perspective reporting on the issue. What more was there to say on that? But then one day, her friend, a photographer, told her something she'd never heard before.
About these couples that had been abducted by the LRA when they were children, had been forced to be together while in captivity, have children, live lives together, and then escaped. And that once they escaped, they decided to reunite, you know, while free and try to lead lives of some kind of normalcy. And I had never heard of this before, and I was immediately intrigued.
She wanted to know more, so she arranged with her photographer friend to travel north.
And that took about like 5 or 6 hours. Should be only 4 hours, but the roads were bad. And then we got to Gulu, and then we took one motorbike. So it's like Victor, who was the interpreter/guide, was driving the motorbike, and then myself and Tade, the photographer, were on the bike behind him. So it was like three of us on this bike. And we rode to their village.
They met up with a local NGO, and workers there were able to put them in touch with couples that had been forced together under the Lord's Resistance Army, the LRA. But amongst all those she spoke to, there was one couple that really stood out.
You know, some Bosco, and I realized that their story was something I had never heard before and something I wanted to get to know deeper. And Eunice and Bosco welcomed us into their home, and we sat down with them. And we just had sort of an introductory conversation where they already knew who the Refugee Law Project people were, but I introduced myself, the photographer introduced himself. And we just asked them to tell us just a little bit about their experiences. And just from that moment, from that initial moment, I knew that I wanted to spend more time with them.
Alexis knew from the NGO she was talking to that Eunice and Bosco had met after a teenage Eunice was kidnapped and taken into the bush. There she'd been forced to marry. Bosco, who was a soldier in the rebel army, had claimed his bride. Now Alexis knew that broaching such a sensitive subject would be difficult, so she decided to start slowly.
You know, when I first started meeting with them, I wanted to first start with the more happier parts of their memories. I started with their childhoods, the things they liked to do, their interests, their families.
Some of those interviews she would do with both of them together, but not always.
During that time, I mean, sometimes they'd be together. Often, you know, one or the other would have to go take care of the kids or cook or do something around the house. So it ended up often interviewing them separately.
Slowly, she began to piece together what had happened. She heard how, after being dragged into the forest with her sister, Eunice was marched, along with dozens of girls, for miles, until they came to the rebel army's camp. Bosco recalled choosing his unconsenting wife. Their first night together, Eunice told him to stay away. He raped her anyway. The following months were strained, Alexis heard. And yet somehow, over time, and against the backdrop of the unrelenting brutality of the Civil War, the two became closer. They had experienced similar horrors, being forced under threat of death to kill or mutilate innocent villagers they came across. Now, in the camp, they were constantly finding themselves on the run from the government troops who were chasing down the LRA. And they were experiencing periods of desperate hunger. "We were happy to have each other because we thought we were all we had left," Eunice told Alexis. 4 years after they first met, Eunice gave birth to a boy. They called him Edmund. And then they knew they had to leave. Eunice and Bosco escaped the clutches of the LRA, but it was a perilous process. Eunice left first, picking a quiet moment and then walking as confidently as she could muster away from the camp and onwards. After a tense wait, Bosco joined her. They set up home together, tried to make a life and put the horrors of what they'd experienced behind them. But the LRA had cast a long and dark shadow across the country. Thousands of people had been traumatized by Joseph Kony's rebel army. And so most could just not accept Bosco and his bushwife. It was a hard story to hear. Sitting there, spending hour upon hour with both Eunice and Bosco, Alexis found herself needing to keep her own emotions and judgments in check, especially when hearing about how their now loving relationship had started with such a horrifying rape.
It's not easy because when I'm hearing the story of Eunice's sexual assault, of course I'm feeling upset for her and, you know, feeling like this was something wrong that happened to her. But at the same time, when I'm talking to Bosco, I genuinely want to hear what the experience was like for him too. And I think that the way I was able to reconcile it in my mind was knowing that they were children at the time, that this was something that both of them didn't want to go through. You know, they didn't want to be abducted. They didn't want to be forced to commit violence. And so, you know, it was a constant test, I think, to withhold judgment, to listen openly to both of them. And that, I think, was aided by the fact that, you know, I was continually grateful that they were opening themselves up to me at all. And so I figured I might as well, you know, do them the service of trying not to be judgmental.
Alexis was doing these deep, intensely personal interviews through a translator. Now that can sometimes be a hindrance. Nuance can get lost in questioning. Making a personal connection is hard with this wall of incomprehension between you. But in this case, Alexis actually found her translator's own lived experience made things easier.
When I got to the parts of their lives that were more unsettling, you know, their abductions, their times in captivity, I was greatly aided by Victor, the interpreter, who had a similar experience. He was abducted as a child. He later escaped. And I found that he often, gave me great guidance on how to broach certain subjects.
When it came to the time that Alexis wanted to ask Eunice about the rape, she brought in a female translator, aware that that might make things more comfortable.
So I was always trying to be sensitive to their experiences and also, you know, to make sure to be human at the same time and not just sort of issue question after question. You know, if I'm asking a question and they answer with something that was very difficult, I wanted to take a moment to say, you know, I'm sorry that happened to you. You know, let's take a break, you know, just express my own sympathy in order to show that this is a conversation, this is a dialogue, and this is not just me expecting them to list all the worst things that have ever happened to them.
Now, she knew she wanted to talk to others that knew Eunice and Bosco, partly to double-check some of the parts of their story, but also to hear how those that knew them dealt with this untraditional and complicated relationship. So after some persuasion, she came to interview Eunice's mother. But it didn't go smoothly.
You know, I mean, I explained to her that I was a journalist, but because there was such stigma against couples like Eunice and Bosco in the community, I mean, really against all returned former soldiers of the LRA, she didn't want to say anything that would get them in trouble.
You see, there was all kinds of stigma surrounding those that returned from the LRA troops. And there were constant rumors about law enforcement coming to arrest those that had been caught up in the violence.
And so at first she was telling me a story that no, they had been a couple before they had been abducted, that nothing had been gone wrong. And then later, you know, kind of admitted that that was not the case. So yeah, it was. I guess, you know, with the journalistic process, it's a constant struggle of trying to get your subjects to trust you, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Eventually, Alexis managed to work out from all the different parties involved what had really gone on. And with a powerful story in hand, she left Uganda and flew back to the States. But she couldn't get the thought of Eunice and Bosco out of her head.
Yeah, I felt very affected by their story because I think by virtue of spending so much time with the subject, inevitably getting close to them, caring about them, caring about what happens to them. They become part of your lives and you become part of theirs. And it's, you know, it's not really easy or nor possible to really forget about them. And so hearing about these really traumatic details, hearing about their struggle to now, you know, sort of live life as normally as they can, but with still struggles ahead of them. It was something that was hard to forget, and it was something that I kept being reminded of as I transcribed their interviews, as I wrote about them.
She tried to push it aside, but just couldn't let it go. And that's when she decided she needed to go back and hear more. But it wasn't just Alexis who was impacted by those interviews. Soon, she'd learn how others were affected too.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Months had passed, and Alexis was heading back to Uganda. She'd got a book deal. The idea was to tell the stories of everyday men and women living with extremism in Africa. And she knew she wanted to include Eunice and Bosco's story in that book. It was only when she'd arrived back in Uganda that she heard their concerns. Eunice and Bosco's son, Edmund, was sick.
He was experiencing sort of shaking spells, seizures almost, that they that they believed were due to a kind of possession, that they felt like the spirits of the people they had killed were now committing revenge on them by possessing their son and making him ill. He would yell out things like, you know, why are you killing me? Or other phrases that Eunice and Bosco believe their victims had said to them. And to me, it kind of seemed something like sort of secondary trauma.
The parents had tried to keep all the details of what they'd experienced in the bush from their young son. But one day he confided in his mother, telling her that during Alexis's first visit, he had listened in to some of the interviews.
And that was, you know, it was tough to hear. You know, I felt bad because whenever we were doing interviews, we had tried to, you know, keep the children away, but obviously that wasn't successful. You know, as reporters, we go in to do stories and we try to be sort of objective and like, you know, not really interfere in our subjects' lives as much as possible. But, you know, it happens. It's inevitable for it to happen, whether it's, you know, affecting the path of our subjects' lives or affecting even the small details, it happens. And so I think it's interesting to investigate, you know, why and when that happens and what results.
Despite the impact on their lives, Eunice and Bosco said they were happy to have talked to Alexis. After all that time spent with them, she was surprised just how happy a life they'd managed to build together. And the more she talked to other people, she realised just how unusual Eunice and Bosco's relationship was. Many couples were much less content.
Like when I was interviewing Ida, who was a young woman who was forcibly married to Michael, a commander in the LRA. And, you know, she was living with him. She had reunited with him. But it was clear to me that she wasn't happy being with him. They had had a very abusive relationship while in captivity. And I asked her, you know, is this someone you love? Do you love him? And she goes, yeah, I love him. But then she admitted she doesn't really know what love is. And I thought, wow, like this is another story here, you know? Eunice and Bosco are one story, but they're not the only story of what happens to these people who are forced to be together while in captivity by this rebel group. You know, theirs had their own certain ending and they're still making out together and they're trying to be happy together. But then there's also this other story of this woman who, you know, it didn't work out for her and she's trying to make the best of it as she can, but it's not a happy story.
In 2017, the book was published and seeing her first book on the shelves was a strange sensation.
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's very satisfying because you feel like, okay, I've put this into the world. It was the result of a lot of hard work, and it feels like kind of a, you know, a testament to the years I've spent reporting in Africa, and also hopefully something I can add on to one day. You know, when I do return to reporting on the continent, you know, a foundation to which I can add more work.
And to this day, Alexis is kept in touch with Eunice and Bosco.
I am, and I'm actually really hoping to be able to get to Uganda later this year and visit them.
That's all for this episode of The Tip-Off. Thanks to Alexis Okewo. Her beautiful book, A Moonless Starless Sky, is out now. Our theme music is by Dice Muse. Another music in this episode by Poddington Bear, Blue Dot Sessions, and Springtide. We're on Twitter at Tip-Off Podcast or at MaveMCC. And please do take a moment to leave us a review in iTunes. And then stay tuned for more stories behind the headlines.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.